Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And welcome to the NXT review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by the Dudley Boys of What Culture, Michael Hamblett and Michael Sidgwick, to review everything that happened on last night's episode of NXT. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review NXT, Raw and SmackDown, but also AEW, Dynamite, pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week completes with a bloody good quiz, of course, on WrestleCulture. As I said, they're joined by Hamblett and Sidgwick to review NXT and whisper it, Michael Hamblett. But has NXT got its groove back?
Enough to not like make it this like detestable, sludgy 2 hours. I've enjoyed at a certain distance every NXT since the Tuesday move. I'd be lying to myself if I said part of that wasn't because of the day of the week move, because of the the forcing of how much wrestling we need to watch. So, that's kind of like that slanting my critical view on it slightly. But I think this show felt certainly quite fast moving. I didn't love all of it, but I liked plenty of it. And my overarching takeaway, seems to now be this show desperately needs out of the Capital Wrestling Center. I'm getting the odd splashes of creative color on this dark and dingy atmosphere that kind of sucks everybody into it. I think everybody feels worse off for this. And I didn't really care about that before Stand and Deliver because I thought the product was so rubbish. I'm starting to like enough of these people that I wish they were doing this stuff somewhere else.
Not particularly life-affirming show for me. You know, my problems with the format and the philosophy and the production style and all the rest of it are long-standing at this point. I don't think this is a particularly great show. Wasn't life-affirming, wasn't particularly energetic. Usual NXT bollocks of a few cell phone segments where certain people were saying, oh, you stop caring about me. There's a reason for that. It's it's not the one you think. But look, I like the NXT redemption element to it. And there's a wrestler on this show who I'm pretty much as high on as I was Saray last week. My God, there was a performance in that main event, which itself wasn't fantastic, and that I thought actually was individually. A little hook I'm going to put you on there, just for the end.
I don't want to be accused of having a God complex, but yet again, another show it felt like they designed specifically for me. Legado del Fantasma stand tall, Zach Gibson calls someone a knobhead, and Cameron Grimes, baby, going to the moon! And maybe just the fact that I had to watch Raw this week. So yet again, I'm hey, Meg, did you get less ugly? Good stuff. Right, let's start at the beginning of the show. Mercedes Martinez taking on Dakota Kai, the match she sure saw as a sort of stepping stone to Raquel Gonzalez. I bloody love Mercedes Martinez. I say this a lot, but I just think she's such a great ass kicker, and that's what she did to start off the match. She was in control. Kai did get some offense in. Then there was a trifecta of double underhook suplexes that sent Dakota Kai to the outside. Martinez goes after her. There is NXT Women's Champion Raquel Gonzalez. They have a stare down. Martinez blocks a shot from Gonzalez. What's the referee's not looking? Nails her. Gets back in the ring. Lays out Dakota Kai. Picks her up for a finisher or some sort of fireman's carry or whatever. And then in comes Gonzalez with a big old boot DQ win for Mercedes Martinez. Gonzalez attacking Martinez after the match, hoying her into the ring post, into the barricade, laying her out, basically. DQ bollocks, yes, Michael Hanfler, but you were complaining that we weren't definitively knowing whether Raquel Gonzalez was a good guy or a bad guy or whatever. This seemed to sort of establish that, yeah, she's just paranoid already.
Yeah, I guess it did. You know, this is the first time in a while a screwy finish has actually ruined a match for me. And that's a backhanded compliment to the match, because NXT's been like doing this stuff for quite a while now. And a lot of the time I'm not bothered. You know, like I don't have that sense of feeling robbed of something like I did here, because I was really, really enjoying this, like really enjoying it. I like Mercedes Martinez. I don't think I like her as much as you, Will, to be honest, but I do really like her. I think she's dangerous, and she plays the giant role really well, a la Raquel Gonzalez or Rhea Ripley. Mercedes Martinez very easily levels up to that in a way that allows Dakota Kai to be the brilliant like cutoff merchant she is. Like stuff like the code breaker counter, like coming through the ropes just to like steal the advantage again. Like I love stuff like that. I bought 100% that we were going to get a finish here. So I thought Mercedes Martinez was going to have to work to get a win over Dakota Kai, which is in service of everything else they've been doing, which is Dakota Kai takes one too many pinfalls and it doesn't really help Raquel Gonzalez's trajectory. Happened for them as a tag team. Thought it was going to happen here. Still not sure why they didn't just deliver that here. Like, I honestly thought it made more sense. Like, often when this happens, it's because they get so obsessed with this idea that, well, we've got to protect that finish, we've got to protect that pinfall. Made sense for Kai to get beat here, for Mercedes Martinez to be the better woman tonight. And you still could have established Gonzalez as more of a heel than a babyface, more of somebody that wanted to look out for a friend. Like, everything else about the match was so great. I'm into Gonzalez Martinez. I wish she decked her after the bell and after the win, and they presented it as paranoia that way than how this match really cheaply ended. I was really enjoying it up till then.
Yeah, I wasn't into the match in itself particularly. Martinez's power spots were all great. I don't think anything was threaded together particularly well. There was one moment where to protect a finish or protect a big move, like you could actually see Dakota Kai like kind of like nudge Martinez out of the ring. I thought, oh God, he can't be like film it from a different angle or just simply get on the same wavelength. That took me out of it. I just thought that was amateur hour. And that finish was not just bad because it was anticlimactic. It was bad for two reasons. Beyond that, it was an unholy trinity of a rubbish WWE finish. Number one, it's just anticlimactic. If you're going to do a finish like that, don't go so long in a match. Number two, you've missed a narrative opportunity to create a further rift between Gonzalez and Dakota Kai if they want to do some kind of miscommunication or she botched the interference leading to the win. And number three, we are smart fans. We know the booking patterns. We will suspend our disbelief happily if we are treated with a modicum of intelligence. And the idea is that Mercedes Martinez is not going to take that title from Raquel Gonzalez at this point. Create the illusion that she might by going all the way or some of the way with like a decent victory, a decent clean enough victory that just plants that seed of doubt. I thought this was an omni failure of WWE parody booking. In the match was only good in spite of a dynamic that didn't really work for me from the jump.
Then we got backstage, an interview with the women's tag team champions, Ember Moon, Shotzi Blackheart. Some flowers were delivered. And after that, Frankie Monet showed up saying, oh, someone's got a crush on the champs. Read the card. And apparently the flowers were from one Dexter Lumis. And both girls wanted nothing to do with him. Ember Moon's like, oh, I'm married. They must be for you, Shotzi. She's like, no, I'm good. No, it's not for me. Back and forth. This is WWE comedy, isn't it, Sige?
It is, but I don't hate it. I don't hate it at all. I don't love it. It's not like for me, but viewed objectively, what they are doing, and I'm a big fan of this because NXT so often finds itself in circular booking holding patterns, which Jesus Christ will get to with Bronson Reed later on. What they are doing is positioning Frankie Monetti as kind of a disturber. And they are lining up opponents, and they are, I know this word has got a lot of weight, so don't really interpret it with the way I usually use it. I'm not going to use that word, but they are trying to dovetail a lot of what Frankie Monet is doing across this women's division, creating like a shared universe, lining up opponents. This is all like really quite studious booking, I would say. It's such a refreshing departure from the usual way in which they book this women's division. Like, they are actually recognizing it as this sort of bright landscape with varying talents playing varying roles. You've got baby faces who can be taken seriously, who can be taken really seriously in the case of Io Shirai. We've got comedy characters going on. I think this is quite a smart way to book a new talent.
Yeah.
Different from NXT. Like, I'm not into it at all.
I think this, plus what we've had with Zoe Stark lately, and obviously like another pretty successful debut later on the show, it's just nice that they're not being so like ruthlessly linear with this division, because the talent almost allows them to, doesn't it? Like, they've been a kind of a victim of their own in-ring brilliance, that we've just had this like A to B to C plotting, which like delivers something satisfying, but not always something very exciting. I'm with Cedric, I felt that, especially with Frankie Monet. Like, you're kind of NXT trained to assume that like she's going to have this match with Io Shirai now. 4 weeks, big first win. Io lost it. So, you know, like just something like that. And they've given you something different in week two for this character, or week three, I guess, because the first week was her coming out and interrupting Raquel, wasn't it? So yeah, like 3 weeks, three very different interactions with different women on the roster. I got the same out of this. Like, the comedy was almost like the set dressing for them trying with the, like, and like Christ against Raw on SmackDown. Like, couldn't be further away than how they're booking the women. So it's like particularly refreshing considering this is a WWE product.
The highlight of the show came next. It was Cameron Grimes. He was in the jewelry store. He was treating himself to a fancy watch. He was showing off about how much goddamn money he's got. He says, just this coin, gold bites into it. It's a chocolate coin. He says, don't sell me a chocolate watch. And he's looking into getting the fanciest watch money can buy. To be continued. We'll come back to that. And then came another great moment on the show. The grizzled young veterans are in the ring. They're talking about the tag team champions, MSK. They're talking about how, you know, the men make the titles don't make the men. As I mentioned, Zach Gibson called them knobheads. That was a sensational call. He said, basically, they're the best, even if that causes a few snowflakes to melt. Tommaso Ciampa and Timothy Thatcher interrupt their back. They say, we've got quite a lot in common, me and you. Ciampa keeps calling Thatcher Toothless Timmy. They say, look, we're grizzled, we're veterans. They walk down to the ring, they confront them. They say, actually, you know, you beat us last time, fair play, you know, but we've been studying you. Timothy Thatcher's been watching footage and taking notes. And Thatcher remembers when they were at the NXT UK TakeOver Cardiff, I believe it was, and the infamous shoes off if you hate Gibson chant. Thatcher gets a bit intense with it all. Ciampa takes his boot off and twats him with it. They brawl, they beat him down. I'm very excited to see where this goes, Michael Hamflett.
Yeah, I liked it. I was impressed that they found a nice way to introduce the boot as a weapon beyond just one of them decking the other. Like, that was such a tell that they've put more than 5 seconds of thought into something. Like, it sounds like a low bar, but like sometimes I think you really need that, like in NXT, to sort of like have some of your faith restored. It's a match that makes all the sense, like a feud that makes all the sense in the world off the back of the one match they already have. Grizzled young versus grizzled old. I've got like great faith in the outcome, because like surely the match will be tremendous. Just enjoyed it. Like any the same with the women. Anything where you can make me believe like there's actually a division rather than just matches to build matches, and I'll buy it. I'll absolutely buy it, and I'll bet into this.
On a scale of Imperium to 10, it was really nice to give a 6 of like a little bit of a TV presence. Like, I've had just a long-standing gripe with the idea of Timothy Thatcher is just doing like Evolve stuff on national TV. It's like, Jesus Christ, it just doesn't work. This was a step, I guess, in the right direction. You don't want him to be a clown, but at the same time, you want him to be halfway entertaining, not just this miserable technical specialist who veers so far into parody that he just never radiates this badass presence. It was kind of wacky. he doesn't have comic timing, but in him not having comedic timing, it was not funny, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah.
Like, you could tell he wasn't entirely comfortable, but at the same time, it was just a little bit different. Zach Gibson calling someone a knobhead. It's great, that, because he'd never have an American, "Hey, dickhead." You wouldn't get that on TV, but they're kind of, because they're British, they get away with it, and they don't really know what the word knob is. So I like that. That cheeky bit of enterprising swearing, because we all, a lot of us, unless the word comes out of Taz's mouth, it's getting a little bit lame on the other channel and the better channel. So this is like a nice different way of actually accomplishing that. The match will be good. It's something to do for the Grizzly Young Veterans. That isn't the immediate rematch with MSK, so that hasn't been completely cannibalized. Yeah, I was quite into all this.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see where this goes, and I do like the idea, like you say, of Thatcher watching it and getting a little pop out of it and then trying to ape it, and like you say, he can't really get his head around it, and it's, again, it's British humor trying to watch their version of the bloody in-betweeners, trying, the Americans try and do that, for goodness sake.
It's a juxtaposition, isn't it? Like, that's what you need from Thatcher on national TV. Like, you need it, because what you can bring just doesn't work in that realm. So I was honestly entertained for one of the first times.
I like the idea of one of the Grizzly Young Veterans calling him Toothless Timmy and him being like, "You can't call me that. Only Thatcher can call me that," as well. I don't know. But like you say, can't wait to see where this goes next. Speaking of tag teams, it was Drake Maverick, Killian Dane. They were backstage, and Drake Maverick has got a brain, because he was like, "Well, because I know where this is going. We're facing Imperium later, and you've been making eyes at them for bloody ages. You're either going to abandon me, I'm going to walk out and be on my own, or I'm going to come over to the corner, try and tag you, and you're going to turn on me," basically. And Killian Dane eased his nerves, apparently, Michael Sidgwick, by quoting George Michael. "You've got to have faith."
Again, juxtaposition. Nice. It's not too wacky where it becomes that dreaded WWE thing. It's just this kernel of a popper that doesn't betray the act itself, provides a little bit of warmth and levity to it. I enjoyed this backstage segment.
I thought it was a missed opportunity from your best friend Wade Barrett when they were thrown at the stairs later on the match to go wham like that. that was your tear, but he lost that one.
No, he referenced another popular music star of the 80s, and that was Michael Jackson later on, so I'm not sure how well advised that was, but
it was a bit of a careless whisper, that one.
Doesn't whisper anything. Boom.
Right, let's get on next to Toni Storm. She got this in-ring promo. She talked about Zoe Stark, of course. She attacked last week. She said Stark should thank her for making her famous. She was going to end Stark's career basically before it even began, and the rookie that was in the ring was going to be used as an example to Zoe Stark. So Zayda Ramia, I think was her name. She gets chucked all over the place like an empty tracksuit, in the word of Adam Nicholas, to start off with. Storm's toying with her. Storm goes to hit a finisher in the middle of the ring and decides, no, that's not enough. I'm going to go up top to hit this. She climbs the top turnbuckle, all looks set up to hit a finisher. When Zoe Stark comes out, the distraction allows Ramia to knock Storm off the turnbuckles and then hit a spectacular shooting star press. And Toni Storm gets beaten by a rookie, Michael Hanfler. I really like this.
Oh, God, man. Like, two members of the Click book NXT. And this reminded me of two other members of the Click that I wish were booking NXT. Because it was such a great 1-2-3 Kid Razor Ramon energy in the finish of this. The shooting star press is the updated version of the 1-2-3 Kid's moonsault that clocked Razor back in the day. It couldn't go without a distraction, but I can't hate it, because they've actually set up this story. They've set up, like, Toni Storm as this proper arsehole, like the way she ran down last week just to put the boots in. Like, really cruel, and had payback coming. And yet Stark isn't so, like, ingrained in the culture that maybe she doesn't yet have the confidence to return fire by putting the boots in. Stand on the ramp, I will absolutely take. And you've potentially gotten Ramia over as a star. I don't know if this will be a one and done, and they'll present her as a jobber after the fact, and she'll lose two or three big matches. But the fact that Stark has been losing and losing upwards tells me that, like, I don't feel like this was an accident. We've just seen somebody do a shooting star press. That move has got such a timeless quality. And we know within, like, as Cedric said earlier on, as the smart fans, we know within the WWE system how much trust you need to establish to be allowed to do that in the first place. It's Evan Bourne doing 10 in a row before he was allowed to do it. It's all that stuff. I love this. Like, I love this presentation. It's a pretty timeless one of how to do a really great and entertaining upset. I love what they've done with Zoe Stark, just everything so far. Banging to Zoe Stark and Toni Storm as a match, as a feud. And I think I've got like pretty high hopes for how they're going to push forward with Raimi after the fact. What a lovely bit of television all this was.
I'll be kind and I will say it was productive and they've tried to do things. I don't think Raimi looked good beyond the finish. Got lost badly in a 4-minute match against the season pro and Toni Storm. Like, that's not a particularly good omen for what they might do with her going forward. You didn't get the same. It was 1-2-3 kid in vision, if not execution. So it was productive. They tried to do different things here. It was the type of victory, or the type of loss, sorry, in the part of Toni Storm that really doesn't matter. It seeks to build something else. And you get like a nice little byproduct of it ultimately. But yeah, poor Amy got lost. And I've already seen Storm versus Stark. I don't know what they're doing with Toni Storm. If I'm being critical of this segment, which again, otherwise was productive, I'm thinking Toni Storm's got more to do at this point than Zoe Stark. And it might end up in her winning the feud in a lengthy 15-minute match that acts as a, Jesus Christ, that was way better than I was expecting, breakthrough, and Stark loses nothing and losing it. But I will reappraise this if and when that happens.
LA Knight was backstage cutting a promo, basically saying that Indy Hartwell shouldn't fancy Dexter Lumis, or doesn't fancy Dexter Lumis, wants to spend the night with LA Knight, basically, all that. He walks off, and then Ever-Rise, they know what they're doing, Ever-Rise now. Ever-Rise walk in like, oh, hey, do you want to talk about our highly successful internet talk show? And she goes, no, back to you guys. This popped me. I loved it.
I like Ever-Rise a lot. More for them to do on this TV show, please.
Yeah, it's got to like at some point evolve beyond this crack, isn't it? Where they get like one line a week because they're still too funny. I like the implication from LA Knight about like he's well aware of Dexter's past with girls, and he's obviously referring to like the Sam Shaw storyline in TNA from when he was there. So like, it doesn't end well. It's no good. I'd steer away Indy Hartwell.
And then we got the match where if Bronson Reed beats Austin Theory, he gets another shot at the NXT North American Championship. They tried to sort of explain away the 50-50 booking we complained about as Stand and Deliver by saying, well, he probably wasn't 100% after going through the gauntlet, blah, blah, blah. I have to say, Austin Theory is fast becoming one of my favourite things in terms of in-ring in NXT, obviously with all the caveat of the issues we spoke about yesterday and we speak about every time with the speaking out allegations. Initially, Reed, of course, overpowers Austin Theory and then Gargano because he's a... Oh, by the way, when Reed was walking to the ring, there was like the ominous shot we've seen previously with that Karrion Kross standing there to freak out with Kyle O'Reilly for his match. Austin Theory pops out and goes, hey, guys, what are you doing in the dark? I don't know why that tickled me so much. Anyway, in the match, yeah, Gargano, of course, interferes. He hits Reed with a super kick. Poise him into the ring steps. We go to break. Theory still in control when we come back. Eventually, Reed hulks up, chucks Theory about. Theory hits him with a blockbuster for a near fall. They trade quite a few near falls at that point. They're both knocked down at one point, and out comes Dexter Lumis. Indy Hartwell, by the way, when she came out with the rest of the way, is just in a right old mood. She's not happy. Hartwell doesn't want anything to do with Dexter Lumis. She walks off. Walks away from him. She rolls into the ring mid-match. Lumis gets on the apron. They look at each other. Hartwell says, just talk too much, Dexter, basically. Lumis gets bumped off the apron by Theory. And Reed, in the end, hits a tsunami to get the 1-2-3. He now is the number one contender of the NXT North American Championship. And Dexter Lumis... well, just stares at the rest of the way. Siege, what do you think of this?
It's either a really convoluted and, at this point, redundant means of building a champion, right? Or it's the absolute death knell of Bronson Reed's career. Surely after this, if he fails, it's like, right, I can never take him seriously on this brand again unless he turns heel or whatever. And I don't want him to. He's so fun with the right measures. As a caveat, as this guy who can just toss people around at his whim, just trap them. And like Austin Theory's not a small guy nor a slouch. So you get these little moments in these matches, even if the possibly go a bit too long considering their set dressing for Gaga. I don't want him to be a face. I kind of partly want him to seem to win that North American title, but I just kind of take him seriously in the role. This match didn't do a great deal beyond being quite entertaining in patches to like get him over as a serious like championship caliber guy. I'm as hopelessly in love with this Index stuff. The handful, I don't know when he missed it, a few days of action, of content. That WWE trademarked Index, In-Dex.
Amazing. That's brilliant.
Classic. Right. I'm as hopelessly in love with Index beyond all my sensibilities as I am, as Indy Hartwell is with Dexter Lumis himself. Such a, like, bizarre, but like definitely earned in organic chemistry. And I'm shipping the idea of Dexter Lumis, like, with his choke kink and Indy Hartwell being absolutely bang up for it. Like, it's quite a really, like, neat update on, like, a love angle, a romance angle. Like, it's really funny. The chemistry's there. Indy Hartwell's fabulous as a comedic performer. Bang into that more than I am what this ultimately was also trying to do, and that's build a title match.
Why can't these crazy kids just get it together?
I know.
I'm saying about these two far more than I am like the growth of a Bronson Reed or whatever. Like, it's just, yeah, I thought the match was so dry for me until it actually got good at the end. Like, this, when the sledgehammer of plot was swung, I was into it. But I'm like, the outcomes,
we've seen it a million times as well.
Yeah, like, they're kind of reaping what they sow with Bronson Reed, aren't they? Because we're like, with hit, it's not even just, oh, this is an NXT thing where they kind of like go half in with a guy and then ask you to like suddenly back him to the hilt when he gets the opportunity. It might be the one where he's going to win the title. They've literally done it with him. It's not just with like other, it's not just like we're looking at a sort of a Leon Ruff, to use a recent example, where he gets the fluke win. They've done this bit with Bronson Reed. This will be the third time now. And you're just like, oh, all right, fine. Maybe he's going to get it done. But I feel like they've probably cashed in the opportunity of that magic first victory. But I completely echo Cedric. I love this stuff so much. I love the Indy Hartwell and Dexter Lumis angle. I love the way it's bringing in other people. This goes back to what we were saying about the Frankie Monet stuff earlier on, and to a lesser extent, the finish of this match. You just want this place of work to feel real, and you want just, like, you can't have everything overlap. It would get messy. But, like, the odd little overlaps that they shouldn't be afraid of, that we probably don't see enough of, to make all of this feel more real and feel a bit lived in. Like, I welcome that, if nothing else. So I quite like how it's like spilled over into other situations over the last couple of weeks, as well as being like quite funny, and as well as making you actually root for two characters. It's nice and it's an escape. And NXT has been specifically bad at those two things for quite a long time now.
It's just such a perfect fundamental driver of television, the will they, won't they. Mm-hmm. Like, done well, right? It's like genuinely lovely. You'd love to see it. Like, you love, like, Jim and Pam, absolute perfection. Ross and Rachel to a lesser extent, because Ross is just an absolute botherer. But I'm more into the will they, won't they on NXT than I am like the pro wrestling show. So I'll take goddamn what I can get from this. Will Bourne, I've popped you.
I'm just remembering when you said you sat down with your missus to watch the American Office and first saw the, oh, you know, we all know what happens with Jim and Pam. She was just like, ah, oh, so they're going to get together.
And
no, like, let it on.
God, just enjoy it.
Both, am I right in saying as well, Cedric? I think I'm speaking on behalf of your wife as well. Both Dudley wives saying, well, I mean, I'd have probably gone with Karen.
Right there. Yes, I.
Yeah, that's the dual take of both Dudley wives.
And I do like the whole scheming alongside this of Candice LeRae. Of course, we know that they're getting, I think it's next week actually, they're getting a title shot of the NXT Women's Tag Team Championships. And LeRae puts everything on what happened down to Moon and Blackheart and saying they're trying to steal your man, etc. And that would obviously feed in later on as well, Hamflet.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the thing I've really enjoyed how, as I said, how it's like spilled over into other issues. Mm. This like deathly dull booking of the way versus Shotty Blackheart and Ember Moon has life to it, because there's a story adjacent to it that's actually interesting. So you cannot sell me another, oh, Candice LeRae and Shotty Blackheart hate each other, but you can sell me this match one last time because of how this has folded into it.
Can I be cynical here? proper tinfoil hat stuff. Have you noticed knobheads in NXT creative? Those cynical knobheads are tossing out a false count anywhere match and a street fight on the exact same show on the eve of Blood and Guts in a cynical dickhead bid to desensitize wrestling fans and to quench their appetite for violence ahead of AEW's biggest TV show of the year so far. What a... They're doing it on purpose. Yeah. Either that or they're dumb enough to do two stipulation matches on one show. Which is it? It's probably both.
I can see them ending the show on Tuesday going, well, that's it, all enough wrestling for me for now. But I won't need to watch any more wrestling no matter what they do for the next few days.
If you want to see more destruction after this, you're a sick freak. That's what Barrett's going to say.
Dexter Lumis and Indy Hartwell finally having their first kiss as Bronson Reed holds up the title. It's like, we've got love and guts.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Right, interesting move next, I thought, Michael Hamflett. They had an update on former NXT champion Finn Balor, and they've turned him heel because he's off there showboating. He gets to go on bloody holiday. Oh, it's nice for some, isn't it? Yeah, he was off recovering. I'm joking, of course. Recovering in Mexico, I think is the way the locals say it. And he's going to be back next week.
Odd, but I like that Finn Balor more than I like the one that held the belt for 6 months. So jury's out, I think. Really strange to be like the most intense cat in the universe got his clock cleaned at a takeover and it's turned him into a man that's found joy in life again. Like this sails dangerously close that being like, nothing makes an NXT champion happier than being nowhere near NXT. Check out Adam Cole later on, basking in the glow of the sun. Like it's almost like, get yourself away from this product and you'll find happiness. So they're like skirting a bit of a thin line there. But yeah, not what I expected. So I'll judge this more on what I see next than what I saw here.
Yeah, my immediate take upon watching this was they're going to run a storyline where someone at some point within the next, well, probably when they challenge him or confront him next week, is going to like accuse him of going soft. Mm. And like, that's like saying, I know I shagged him out to Finn Balor, considering what his disposition. I'm not going soft. He's soft? He's not Scottish. I can't do that. He's not Enzo Amore either. Enzo Amore comes back. I'd love the show. But no, that seems to be the setup. You've gone soft since losing the title. You've lost your edge. You're losing your title. You go on holiday. Where's the old Finn Balor? So I'm 40. I'm 40. How much older do you want to be? half decent source of conflict, I guess.
I said this on the news this morning, and it's a Sid, you'll say this a lot in terms of, you know, you're grading on a curve. It's a very low bar. But in terms of like just NXT giving their former champions who've just lost their big belts a bit of time off. I know we've seen Io Shirai doing interviews and stuff, but you don't have to bring them back next week and be like, well, I've lost the title, but LA Knight's here now, so I want to deal with that. It's like, just give it a bit of space to breathe. I realize it's what, 3-4 weeks since TakeOver San Diego, so it's not that much time, but just a bit is a pleasant change from what we get on the main roster.
It's typical social media, I know, isn't it? It's just all cat pictures. Not what it was.
Right, we got
Careless Whiskers. That's what Wade Barrett can say. Careless Whiskers now that you're gallivanting off to Mexico.
Maverick and Dane versus Imperium came next. And, very nearly what Drake Maverick had been predicted sort of manifested itself. Imperium cut the ring in half, beat the crap out of Drake Maverick when he was on his own. He lost the button on his jeans. He got his head kicked in. And when he finally, in a weird sort of, I'm not looking at my corner, sliding over, trying to get to the tag, finally went to do that. One of Imperium knocked Dane off the apron, and Maverick thought, oh no, he's done it. He's turned on me. He's left me behind. He was heartbroken. That wasn't the case, though. Dane rushes in, clears house, runs wild, and then gets taken out on the outside. Alexander Wolf, who's with them, he's there. He grabs a chair. Marcella Bartel, I believe it was, tells him to hit Dane with a chair, but Wolf just couldn't do it. Bartel gets him in Wolf's face. In comes a flying Drake Maverick through the ropes. And then Wolf stands in between Dane and the ring post when Dane's trying to post Bartel. All that allows them to double team Drake Maverick in the end, take Dane out of it, hit him with that doomsday uppercut, European uppercut thing that they do, and get the victory. And then this sort of weird posturing on the ramp from Aichner and Bartel and Alexander Wolf. An element of intrigue, I suppose, is the nicest thing I can say about this, Sige.
I mean, I don't buy, nor am I into an Alexander Wolf babyface turn. What's causing all this? I just don't really get it. It feels like if he was going to turn baby, this group is so one-dimensional, Imperium, which is the problem when you try and use them as a foundation to tell an actual story. The characters are not drawn particularly well at all. I don't know anything about their history beyond they are drawn together because they're all serious, miserable bastards. One of them now has a soft spot for... I just don't get it. It feels like they're telling a story for story's sake because they've realised Imperium are boring and they should probably do something with them that's more TV. I don't get this Imperium stuff. I don't like it. They continue to do halfway decent stuff with Drake and Dane in contrast to that. I like how they use actual physical story beats to show the story of their friendship without telling it. Like his jumped up die through the ropes, how he was helped and stuff. I'm quite like that, but I don't give a shit about Imperium. And this didn't really do much to help that.
It's surreal that they're like, hey, do you remember when we're Insanity when Eric Young was off in TNA or in Impact Wrestling, I should say.
That's it. I was, pretty critical of Matt Jackson's melodrama, but
that's cool. You forgot they were in that bloody stable together.
Well, that's it. It's not like Sanity with the Elite, it's not like the song you did. It kind of got this like Wolf and Dane thing, like, oh god, what should I do? I'm so conflicted. It's like, I don't give a toss either way. That's the major problem about that. Like, reform Sanity for all I care. I could well see them doing it, I could actually, they'll do some daft bits. So, like, Imperium are so freaking dry and boring and black trunks and canvas and all that. So, like, Killian Dane will just like give Wolf his old red stripy Sanity tights and maybe try these on her. And then you'll have there'll be Drake Maverick can do his cosplay bit that he enjoys where he looks ridiculous in other wrestlers' clothes. And that brings Walter out for a 3-on-3. I said, I don't know. It's just, there's a, what did you say? It was a shred of intrigue, Will Bond. That's exactly what this was. Imperium is so drab. And all I got was a shred of intrigue. He won't hit him with a chair. Where's his lighters? All that. It's the end result. Unless the end result of Walter in, it's not going to be that good, is it? It's going to be as aggressively fine as this.
Just as long as it means to an end, we get Drake, no offense to Drake Maverick, but getting Drake Maverick chopped by Walter is still something that I need.
I can't believe they didn't chop him at the time. ridiculous.
And if I was if I was Nikki Cross, I'd be like, I think we should reunite Sanity so I can go back to NXT rather than mess with that stupid bloody twat.
Hey Drake, we're thinking about you selling the shop. Oh yeah, boss, how do you want me to do it? Can you cry on cue? I think I might have it in me, yeah. I'll see what I can do.
Promo from Pete Dunne. I like this again. He says he's got the whole locker room shook. He threatened to spark out Walter and take the title that he made famous. He offered out Gargano. He offered out Cross. He's described himself as the baddest man in NXT. Try and prove him wrong. Again, enjoyable this, Sidge.
Sorry, that's NXT. I sometimes zone out. What did he just say?
Pete Dunne promo.
Oh, God, who cares? When he's saying everyone's forgotten about me, it's like, yeah. They have, and it's not because they're running scared, it's because they're running bored, is kind of the problem. It's just the same old problem with Pete Dunne. There is a certain breed of pro wrestler who used to exist in the old world who just isn't a memorable or entertaining or must-see television performer. Pete Dunne's one of them, and whoever challenges him will have a good match with him in a takeover. And until then, it's a bit of a cell phone because they are all but telling you that their booking is backwards through the vehicle of this promo, because Pete Dunne's win over Kushida meant absolutely nothing at all. It meant nothing in the build. It meant nothing in the aftermath. And what they are inadvertently telling you is, oh yeah, the booking's a bit rubbish here. And so are the promos. Great wrestling.
It's rotational, isn't it? Pete Dunne and Kushida fight because people want to see that match. Pete Dunne wins. Kushida wins a belt before Pete Dunne in the aftermath of it. I didn't actually mind the delivery of this, but yeah, Pete Dunne, not for the first time this year, has been undermined by the material in the booking, because it's one thing from say, well, I've already beaten Kushida, so I could probably take his cruiserweight title, or if I fancied getting my belt back off Walter, I could go and do that, blah, blah, blah. And then there's Karrion Kross. But there's not Karrion Kross, is there? Because there was Finn Balor, and you couldn't beat him. And before you had the chance to fight Finn Balor, there was Kyle O'Reilly for the opportunity to fight Finn Balor, and you couldn't beat him. And it's just like, you can say all this, but they've long, long rendered it meaningless.
You know what? I'll be kind of to his delivery, because I'm usually not. He has an energy about him, Pete Dunne. It's not particularly magnetic or compelling, but he does exude, oh Christ, I wouldn't want to hang around with this guy, and he'd probably beat my face in. And there's worth in that, I guess. But, and then there's Karrion Kross. Is there because, what, you're going to put on 10 pounds to go up to the heavyweight division? Why is Johnny Gargano in the heavyweight division? There shouldn't be a cruiserweight division. It doesn't matter that much. I don't think anyone's that bothered. But when you just basically say, I'm going to challenge for the cruiserweight title, and at the same time, I'll throw one out to the biggest guy in the room. It's like, oh, wait, man, it's just loose stuff.
It's like Jericho talking about Sean Spears' upside, isn't it? Like, oh, Pete Dunne, you keep talking about your winning streak. I've never seen it.
time for a bit of a victory lap here on the podcast. We know he'd been linked for a while, but literally called this yesterday myself and Michael Sidgwick, because Cameron Grimes was in the jewellery store. He was looking at watches. He finally picks one out. He says, it's great. It's fancy. This is the most expensive watch. Everyone's going to be jealous of it. He's looking at it on his wrist. And then a very familiar voice says, that's a nice watch. It's just not a $1 million watch. And there is Ted DiBiase shoving it in Cameron Grimes' face. He does his classic laugh. And I pop my little tits off, Michael Sidgwick. Love this.
Like a million times better than any Legends deal, because what they do on the Legends shows, Ted DiBiase is doing it. Are you hanging out with Kelly Kelly?
Kelly at a party by a punch bowl, like with one spotlight in the corner.
They're dancing, but there's no music. It's the most bizarre thing imaginable. What they've done here is they've given you the laugh after he was cruel. That's the whole point. That's what he laughs at. It's not just a wind-up toy. It's your thing, Ted DiBiase. Well, I made you loads of money in the 80s. You should know this. I'm into this. It can't possibly result in a match. I've got no idea where it's going. In terms of skit comedy, that's probably overtaken NXT. They've listened to my advice a little bit too carefully on that one. Yeah, I'm into it. Don't know where it's going. I don't care. They've already got a certain chemistry New money versus old money, I guess. It's just a bit of silly bollocks that I quite enjoyed. I've got no actual insight on it whatsoever.
More of this sort of thing, absolutely, understandably, I would say that. But also, like I said yesterday with usage, they have to do that slow realization of the stepbrothers. Did we just become best friends? Yeah. Because they both like money, they both like being rich, and they both like shoving it in other people's faces. So yes, have these skits for a few weeks where, I don't know, Cameron Grimes has got the best table booked at a restaurant and say, oh, I'm sorry, sir, someone's actually come before you. And then there's Ted DiBiase with 20 lobsters on the table going, ha, 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 or whatever you want to do. Have that, and then have him eventually, as Sid suggested yesterday, become friends, give him the sodding $1 million belt, give him the $1 million championship, Michael Hamlet.
Yeah. Well, that
They've tried to get two people over with that, right? It is a curse of a belt in Austin and DiBiase Jr. Cameron Grimes can get that belt all the way over again.
Totally agree. I mean, Christ, Ted DiBiase Jr. even had Virgil for a few weeks and that didn't help him. Like, there was no saving him. Like,
his charisma.
I love this. Even like Ted DiBiase hanging out in a jewellery shop, flexing his jewellery, like, harkens back to him wearing Vince McMahon's cape for the reveal of the $1 million belt back in 89. So even that, like, for sort of the old demographic they know they've got, like, was appreciated. If this was a one-off, they've set something up knowing that they could deliver it and delivered it, and it's been very satisfying. If it lingers beyond this one gag and you get more of DiBiase with Cameron Grimes, or, as you say, like, fighting over their wealth or their supposed wealth, it's actually somebody getting the rub off the legend. Like, never thought we'd see the day again, but this is actually how you do it.
Indeed. Sorry. Just getting a phone call here from... All right, Benroy. No, I'll tell him. All right. Cheers, mate. All right. Bye. He said Ted DiBiase Jr. wasn't that bad, according to him. I don't know why he'd say that. Right.
Got it. He's got a bat signal appears in the sky, but it's just a turd emoji.
Third DiBiase Jr. He was mechanically sound. I'll give him that.
God. So is my Ford C-Max, but it's not a B-Max.
I've got a Ford B-Max, Cameron Grimes.
To the park!
Oh, dear. Right, next up, it was... Jesse Kamea and Aaliyah, they were supposed to be facing the tag champs, Ember Moon and Shotzi Blackheart. They come down in their tank and what have you. Before they get in the ring, though, there's someone there with more gifts. There's chocolate, there's cakes, there's flowers, etc., etc. And they are jumped, of course, by Indy Hartwell and Candice LeRae, who kick the crap out of them, shove it all in their face. And I don't know why they tickle me so much. Robert Stone, Jessica Moon and Aaliyah go, well, guess that makes us tag champs then. And they just start running around and celebrating in the ring. I thought for a harmless little segment to build for next week's tag match, I really enjoyed this pamphlet.
Yeah. Harmless, inoffensive, all that sort of stuff. I cannot be critical of it because I'm liking the people involved, I guess. You know, it's like, and it was on this sort of show that we're talking about that we're going through, and that was quite nice, I think this fit. I think on a different show and a different time, it probably would have like pissed off me more with the critical eye, but can't hate this.
You'll never please me, right? Ever. Because two parts of my NXT brain, one, oh God, it's so intense and serious. And, oh God, Slipknot there. And it's too silly, isn't it? NXT now. Like, it really is, like, much too silly. And they've just swung dramatically to this new tone that is, like, seeping into virtually every pore of the program. And it's as ineffective in creating something as the old 2019 NXT was for me. Just let them, like, have unscripted promos and learn how to book. Like, that's what I would like.
Then we got the pre-advertised sit-down interview with Adam Cole. He was there with Arash Markazi of ESPN, if I'm not mistaken. They're poolside. Cole's on the phone going, I don't know what they're bloody faffing about at. What are you waiting for? And they just said, waiting for you, dickhead. He got asked about his recovery post-match against Kyle O'Reilly. He said, I could feel better, but I'm still better hurt than the entire roster. He talked about him making the decision to break up the Undisputed Era. He didn't want to carry them anymore. He talks about people thinking that Kyle O'Reilly is now a top star. He's been there for 4 years, but he's still not ready for the main event. As long as I'm in NXT, Cole said, O'Reilly is not taking my spot. He even referenced Karrion Kross as the new NXT champion and hinted at maybe targeting him. Cole thinks, of course, he's better than Karrion Kross. And then he bollocked Mokazi for being unprofessional. And then we cut to Kyle O'Reilly looking all moody in a room thinking, what's this knobhead doing? What did you think of this, Sige? Intrigued about this?
I keep forgetting. Honestly, that they've done such a bad job of presenting this guy. I keep forgetting, right, that Karrion Kross is meant to be a babyface, because I was about to be nice to this promo. You know, that thought was good, so I'll be nice about it again. I was about to be really nice and say, you know what I really liked? The little detail of NXT. Having a heel who's still in the world title picture, just mentioning offhand that he might target a heel just to create this little tiny thread of realism. And I realized I probably could do Adam Cole versus Karrion Kross imminently because Adam Cole's done everything he can in the title picture, so he can lose some matches and it'll still be a big deal because he's Adam Cole and he's a star. It turns out, yeah, Karrion Kross, of course, he is a babyface, isn't he? Doomsday Prophet with a valet who's enormous and boring and he's a baby. Jesus Christ. This is very on the nose, but nonetheless successful in its like objective of trying to get Adam Cole over as a big shot. They like drew through several cliches. Suit, sunglasses, basking in the sun, like unusual location, like living the big life. Even if I don't care still about this feud, and this wasn't the kind of world-class promo, a scripted one very rarely is, I still love Adam Cole so much. And as I was saying, if they're gradually, very, very gradually just tweaking this dynamic to the point where Kyle O'Reilly is just more of himself, like as a reverend guy, and Adam Cole is just this aspirational, wealthy dickhead who is totally delusional, not so much so where it's comedy, but under the impression that he's this major league big shot and he's dressing for the occasion. Like, that's heel work. And I've been crying out for some baby face and heel work in this dynamic. So another tiny step in terms of making this, in my opinion, botched Cole versus O'Reilly breakup that little bit more wrestling-y than Triple H-y.
It just doesn't, this potential dynamic doesn't feel half as uneasy as the first one. Like, it kind of, imagine if Cole had just done this without needing to be decked for over 40 minutes at a takeover first, because this is kind of who Adam Cole was already. I'm not suggesting that I would have wanted much more of the Kyle O'Reilly we got last week, but imagine just having him right out the gates and then wondering what this might have been if this was their first match, rather than this is how they're both trying to... Like, is the crack here that they're both no-selling Stand and Deliver? Like, Kyle is doing it with his hats and glasses and fun times, and Cole's doing it by trying to be the big shot he always was. Like... it's just, yeah, it's marginally better. They're all baby steps, and I worry that the next match could ruin it again. Like, I can't see this next match going any less than like 45 minutes.
The problem is, you can have Adam Cole cut all the quality promos as a big shot in the world. You can have Kyle O'Reilly actually, which is so elusive in WWE, like tap into his real life personality and become this irreverent guy. You can do everything you want with the storytelling. The idea is, though, for me, they've exhausted me on the match. They've exhausted me on the match.
Absolutely. Loser leaves NXT. It's what we need. It has to happen.
It's literally NXT redemption. The best parts of it are the silly parts, and no one is allowed to leave anymore because show in itself, but it can't be a show in itself because for various reasons it can't be. But it is the show that was like... the place that guys would go before going to the main roster, and they've never resolved how to keep people there in an interesting manner. It's NXT Redemption, and I'm sorry.
Intrigued to know what you thought of the vignette that came next, this diamond mine thing. I don't know whether it's, we talked about this on the news this morning, is it a person? Is it a stable? Is it a show? I don't know. Is it Raw Underground repurposed? It's MMA footage. Things like pressure is pleasure and all this. I think CM Punk's coming back, if I'm perfect. What do you reckon, Hamlet?
Let's have more leg kicks in NXT and give some guys some much needed time off, shall we? Like more Chris Weidmans.
God.
It, like, yeah, I got the MMA energy off of this, but the last time I was even permitted to go anywhere near that on a wrestling show, it was Raw Underground. How on earth can you have any faith that this particular version of NXT is going to do anything different than that? Like, how can they make Raw Underground, like, even just grimmer and sadder than the actual Raw Underground was?
To be an NXT. Brawl for All.
Yeah, apparently so. Brawl for All hybrid stuff. I don't know. I don't care, truthfully. I think they've tried, like, they've done this thing where they've given you, like, a teaser trailer, and it's had, like, the opposite effect for me personally. I will accept that as a subjective thing and await what they've got. But a product I had more faith in, I'd probably have a bit more interest in this too.
This, for me, is another manifestation of how, like, the tone is just all over the place. Either it's the most super serious tweener intensity or just the silliest daft bollocks on the show. And this is going to be more super serious intensity, and it's going to jaw quite badly with, like, the cupcakes and the kidnappings and the will they, won't they's. This, if there's an actual wrestler just called Diamond Mine, that is Florida Championship Wrestling all over the place. I don't think it will be. I think the Diamond Mine will be a stable of, like, shooters or MMA guys or whatever. In a very NXT development, like very, very NXT, this sort of thing. It's a kind of thing where if it's going to be the Wish version of Team Taz.
I think Andy suggested, like, Jesmyn Duke and Marina Shafir would obviously be good speakers.
Where are they?
Yeah, but don't know exactly. So maybe this is a one way to possibly to reintroduce them. All I could think I was watching this was Hamlet's reaction. You know, all the, like, oh, pain is just weakness leaving the body, all those empty phrases. It reminded me of when they had that one across from the Millennium Bridge as you cross from Newcastle to Gateshead, when they had that light phrase. I can't remember what it was, but I remember you being absolutely furious about it, Hamlet.
Yeah, I'll dig out. If I can find, I raged on Twitter at the time. So if you can find that tweet, it was something like, it was a contradiction, but they'd put it in big light up letters that probably cost £1,000 per letter. So it was, you know, it was a good investment for the people of Gator that desperately need additional funding. I really respect contemporary city art. Love it.
Yeah, so I have to wrap this podcast up soon because I need to replace the horrible common John Lewis furniture we've got in this house. Finally, let's review the main event. It was Legado del Fantasma versus MS Kushida, as they were introduced or dubbed themselves earlier on. And clearly, Kushida is a huge fan of Zach Gibson. Shoes off if you hate Gibson. He put shoes on because that's how much he bloody likes Zach Gibson. Back in the wrestling boots, I'm sure Cedric was slightly disappointed by that. But Kushida looked great in here. Cleaned house, even held the ropes open so MSK could dive through it and take him out. Legado del Fantasma fight back. Escobar power bombs Kushida through the announce desk. They really sell this. Kushida's getting checked on, etc., etc. Lee gets pushed off the top rope. Carter's checking on Kushida. He gets booted in the face and then hoied into the steps. They're laid out, basically, Kushida and Nash Carter. And that leaves Wesley alone. He is trying his best. He does a flip and gets drop kicked out of midair. They triple team him, quick tags, beat him up. He is completely isolated. Some nice double team moves as well in there from Wilde and Mendoza. He eventually manages to dodge everything, get out of it. Escobar crashes and burns on a splash. Lee finally makes it to his corner where Nash Carter has recovered. He comes in, gets cut off. Kushida tries to make the save. He gets given a phantom driver by Escobar. They hit their double team finisher on Carter. 1, 2, 3. And the show goes off the air with a dominant Legado del Fantasma, standing tall, holding all the titles, and looking great, I thought, Michael Hamlet.
Yeah, I mean, I can't question the commitment to this, considering, I mean, it's a retcon, ultimately, isn't it? Because Legado del Fantasma were complete goons a little while ago. And they were very obviously the third team in a triple threat at TakeOver. So it's possibly trying to shut the steel door after the horse has bolted, but it's admirable at very least. And in it helped, obviously, this match was great. We knew it'd be great. I think Cedric said this last week, it's bold to try and deliver like a firecracker trios match when the genre has now kind of come established and recognized as this AEW thing that where it's been mastered. Didn't hit those levels, but those personally for me weren't my expectations. I got a great deal out of this. You know, some would say go with the flow, some would say swim against the tide. Me, I like a bit of both. You know, I'm very much Gateshead side of the river.
I heard it.
And I got that from this. There was parts of it where you did get that, like, wow, that like firecracker energy, that, oh, this almost looks like a half-decent guy trying to be Rey Fénix. And then it went into that kind of like that NXT very on-the-nose storytelling, which I'm all right with too. So I got like just about everything I need from the match, even though it's a bit like the Pete Dunne problem. You are trying very, very hard, admirably so, to set up challenges that you've already beaten with an inch of their life when it mattered. That sort of stuff is always going to be uphill, unfortunately. It's not particularly the fault of the wrestlers, but it's always uphill from a perception point of view. Like the match. I did like the match.
I was shocked by how not unconvincing this was. The Legado del Fantasma unit looked leagues beyond the three tosses that were just nonsensically battered by Karrion Kross that time. What an absolute stupid bit of booking that was. But it's funny because I can tell by your reaction, Will, like, you've forgotten about that. You forget about bollocks like that and the strength of performances like that. We previewed this yesterday, obviously. You know what? Give us a little bit more money than we need. Go back and listen to the preview on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts from. It was totally redundant at this point. And we said, like, look, there's either you completely kill off a cruiserweight division and act that just through their presence and their in-ring quality of late has transcended like their rubbish booking, or you have to pin a champion, and there's three to choose from. I thought this was really quite elegant in how they made that convincing and not just, ah, Christ, well, I guess they had to do it. I don't think of the people involved particularly well, but, you know, it's a means to an end. I thought it was really elegantly constructed in how they did this. Like a proper shield energy from Legado del Fantasma and how they picked apart this unit that just aren't as united as they are. And I tell you what, the story worked so well, in my opinion, because I didn't really think it was a desperate reach, even though it kind of was. And one of the reasons, goddammit, why this worked when it had very, very little right to is because Wesley is friggin' believable as a professional wrestler. Like, I think he's got the potential, based on his performance level throughout 2021, to be one of the best workers in the entire WWE operation. The timing of his comeback, the way he sold it, just the actual timing of his work in that last stand was unbelievable. He is sensational, and he elevated, like, functional, unconvincing booking into something that I totally bought. I thought he was phenomenal in a match that was merely very good. They did the thing that these NXT versions of hot action matches do, where they just did a bit of WWE TV flavor sprinkled in the middle. And I don't know if it quite reached that exhilarating momentum where you're utterly just, your mind's getting blown. I never reached that sensation. There was still some excellent work and some, as I said, The succinct take here is storytelling that resonated when it had absolutely no right to. Wesley, Jesus Christ, he's amazing.
It's some achievement. Like, they're going to get you hype for the tag title match. And we've seen a different version of this already that theoretically was better. That triple threat was probably destined to be better than the just the two-on-two match. And yet they've kind of worked within one match into thinking, well, I need to see this just a straight tag match now. I need to see if the Legado boys can actually do it against MSK on that, and they won't. But they're giving you like thirst for like trying to fantasy book the best spots, even, which I think is like it's some achievement, really.
As I said at the beginning, ever since they stopped trying to compete with AEW and just moved to their own night, it's got a lot better on NXT, and I really enjoyed this week's show, and I'm excited to see next week's show. And we've got AEW Dynamite to look forward to tonight with a good night's sleep alongside it as well. Let us know your thoughts on NXT on Twitter @WhatCultureWWE. Watch, they can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett @
Michael Hamflett.
You can follow Michael Sidgwick at
Sidgwick.
You can follow me at Adam Wilbur. Follow us all at What Culture WWE. As I said, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts, including, of course, our preview later on today of AEW Dynamite, despite the fact that the real winner of the Wednesday Night Wars is apparently hockey. Right, this has been the NXT review. My thanks to the Dudley Boys. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.